Michael and I would like to welcome you back to another recording of the Saturn-Earth Connection. Our website is helloearth.info, and today is Tuesday, July 19th, 2016, and this is our 318 with Michael from Maui, Hawaii. Michael was taken to a huge luminescent sphere near Saturn as a student visitor and returned to Maui with their amazing flowing dialogue, and occasionally we hear from Shaharon, using Michael to transmit his voice into the recording. And we all want to thank James from North Wales, Pennsylvania, for supporting Michael's hours on the internet. Thank you, James. We appreciate you. Hello, Michael.
Hello, Curtis.
Hello. Welcome back. And yeah, we had a bunch of emails about blue orbs since we talked about blue orbs the other day and showed some. And the emails are kind of long, and I don't know if I'm going to read them all, but how are you, Michael?
I'm fine. And blue orbs, yeah, well, that's the thing about them. Or anything, if people would like to share about. That means they've been either a very common sighting or actual way they or celestial friends have been, you know, coming around. But for me, the blue orb was unique, very unique. It was very interesting. In a sense, and it immediately got my attention as being strange, in a sense that you don't see blue orbs like that floating around or just, you know, hovering around. But anyway, that's just a factor of extension of our reality and our domain. Our planetary situation is definitely in need of some exploration, but an actual, you know, guidance, which is coming around. So using both, you might say, exploration by the celestials, they come in and take a look around and actually evaluate some things. They don't necessarily have to come around and from a very far distance observe and actually and do send in. I'm not sure if they're probes, but they are definitely coming around. But anyway, that's just the concept of the orbs. I have no experience with them other than just visually seeing them.
I saw a green shiny ball, but it didn't just stay in one position. It was like that bouncing ball on, you know, reading the lyrics of a song, like in those cartoons.
Yeah, right.
Bounce, boing, 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 and then bang, right down at a 45-degree angle. Oh, Marcy, did you see that?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I'm so glad she said it. Yeah, she did.
Definitely seems as if they said, "Here I am, here I am, take a look." You know, they were, you know, if it could have stayed, you know, hidden maybe behind some trees, might have been harder to see, but they were obviously trying to get you to see it. I wonder why.
A woman named Vivacious wrote the other day, and she said, this is kind of short, she said she was interested in Riley's book, and she mentioned something about, oh, she saw something, and I said, well, oh, what did you see? And she writes back, and she says, in early February 2015, they came first in a vision. This February 2016, they came tangibly, exactly 1 year. They came not to do me harm, but to enlighten me on how they are able to see from afar how we are destroying our own planet. They cherish their planet and ask me why I think we don't do the same. When they left me that cold night, they made it clear that I can research them, but never to the extent that they're researching me. They somehow knew that I wouldn't doubt them and also not hesitate to share our visit. I've been scared to come forth publicly because I know the doubters will call me crazy. I heard your name on the Stern Show via Riley Martin. And so that was the other day. And Nedham writes about seeing blue orbs or seeing... He went out and took a whole bunch of... Isn't this the one where he says he took a whole bunch of pictures? Maybe I should just... Hello, Curtis and Michael. I was listening to the last two podcasts and wanted to share my own experience of seeing a similar blue orb almost 9 years ago. I don't know if this was an actual celestial experience or if it holds any meaning. For all I know, my mind could have been playing tricks on me, but whatever the case, I feel at the time it was very significant in my life. I was probably around springtime back in 2007. I remember the atmosphere around that evening because I was sitting out on the deck with my friend's house and overlooking the little valley, and it was a warm spring evening and the light still out and the moon in the sky. I was still a teenager at the time, and not long before that I found out about HE 1111 progress group and midwayers with a tiny intro into the Urantia book. I remember having our conversations talking about deeper meaning, and we started talking about the future, and I began starting to share a lot of about finding Riley Martin. As next to the last paragraph, it was at that moment that I had this weird feeling, and I looked up in the sky and I saw this giant blue orb. I can only describe it as a plasma-like orb that was wispy and shining. It was very bright and looked almost exactly like the last picture that was sent, except during that day, it was about as big as the moon in the sky. But I felt it was a lot closer to where we were, maybe less than 1,000 feet in the sky. It stayed in the sky for maybe a few seconds and then just blinked out. The whole event happened in maybe a few seconds, but the feeling I had when I saw the orb in the sky was hard to pin down. Both a type of excitement and hope, and the feeling that it was up there for a little bit before I even noticed it. And Nedham sent that. So another blue orb experience. And Chris in Liverpool sent he's the one who took his smartphone and took about 30 pictures. And I took a look at them, and in the trees, it looked like he could have been reading into it. I don't know, but he says, he did say maybe it was just a trick of the lens. I will also point out that these pictures were even taken through a window. Anyway, I'd love to hear Michael's thoughts on this. Thank you for doing what you do. It's been a pleasure listening to all these years. Your first hour was April 24th, 2007. Wow. Signed, Chris from Liverpool. I didn't read the beginning of his thing. But, maybe I should. Inspired by the recent talk and photos of orbs, I decided to take some pictures of a sunset with my smartphone. After taking about 30 pictures, I looked through them and noticed a bunch of orbs on only one of the pictures. Two of the orbs were more visible than the rest, so I enlarged and enhanced them. One of them seemed to have a face, and the others looked similar to the other orbs in the pictures. So, a lot of orbs in the sky, and A lot of enthusiasm for getting a strange feeling. And, you know, it's when someone says, oh, this happened like 9 years ago, and, oh, can you remember something happening 9 years ago? It just took a second, but it really had a meaning at the time. But there are aliens. We've known that from just looking at how the pyramids were built. And it's amazing when you've gotten so close to Shaharon and what you've said over these years have been amazing, Michael. And when Shaharon comes on, it's amazing. But there's I always want to welcome Shaharon to come visit here, bring his spacecraft, and give me a tour. I'd love a tour, Shaharon. And I know a lot of listeners would like to also, but I know they're busy and they have many things to do. But we're just trying to keep things together here on this planet. We are ruining the planet in many, many regards. And they think of it just as a big playground instead of a huge life support system. So, what is Shaharon doing these days? Hello, Shaharon. Welcome. Glad to hear from you.
Yes, I have been listening for a while. Your commentary concerning our planet. And I did say our planet. Because we do share it in a way. And that we have spent a long time nurturing it through various stages of development. Yes. The handiwork of the human race as a whole has not until recently deformed or challenged the planet's holding capacity. The holding capacity can be many things, holding of life, human life, the holding capacity of purified, or you might say synthesized, balances in the natural tension of various elements, chemicals and molecules, the fears that you have concerning radioactive materials that seem to fall apart, giving off radiation. Radiation, of course, is fearful because it is at a rate that can and does actually harm material bodies down at the very level of the instruction sets that have been implanted into the order of life. You know, that is the genetic material, chromosomes. From that, you can have many, many disturbing things happening. Plant life, organic life, human life. But we have realized in other worlds, in other developments, that there is nothing new. Other planets have gone through this. And the development of it is very well worth it. The entire self-destruction of the planet by humans' own hands are very, very serious. And it is that which we guard against. Waking up the human race, its fallibility sometimes may take a shocking role. It in itself, for its own hope and purpose, may do radical things, guided by a misinterpreted understanding can find its way lashing out against itself. Show a desperate animal nature lashing out, only to make a statement. Something is wrong, is the great cry. Something is out of balance. Take note. These are the things that are coming into the consciousness of the human race and needs to be there. And in it, you, the people, so precious in our sight, will take a look around and begin to adjust and quicken oneself in an active way. This active way is a type of consciousness, active consciousness, living faith. Living faith is a product of interactive personality. The personality of you as a human being laid up against the pressures and guidance, even the voice of the thought adjuster, divine, as much as it can be, impinging itself on the personality of a human being. This action in faith sometimes can produce a misunderstood appearance. But when change is needed to be made, disturbances happen. There are indeed things that have to be changed. Perils that are set up if they do not change can and will create devastation. In other worlds, the entire planetary development has gone awry. But that is the choice and leading of those who have fallen short. Your planet has fallen short of its original guidance. But ultimately, the majority, the vast majority of citizens of the planet are in alignment to universe and paradise gravity. And the action that takes its form in living faith citizens of the planet have been very good. Indeed, the holding capacity of the planet has been increased, but the sharing of the productivity has not. It has been obscured by an overlay of value that is false. The true overlay of value is the ever-growing pressure of paradise gravity. To know Him who set in order all things, and to duplicate the works of one's hands in similitude, in a sense, the creativity of even a tiny part of the first source and center overall, if you look into the actions of young starry systems, which are tightly bound, there is chaos and there is order which finds itself breaking through the chaos. So right now, you will find the time in which consciousness takes a pure root, and the ever-drawing call of paradise gravity will turn the hearts of men toward living faith in truth. It will find its way into their minds as they resolve within themselves the perplexity of the confusion of other human beings who make what seems to be irrational choices. But in our eyes, many of what you see as choices that are harmless seem suicidal to us. And if you only knew, irrational as it means, these things you will grow to understand. But it is not our planetary method of governance that is being operated right now. There is a challenge between the ways and the hopes of how to run the planet. Know that there are many who come in onto your planet to upgrade your understanding, and by so doing, we hope the upgrade in the understanding, the greater position in the universe, your greater position as not a lonely planet, but one among millions and millions of many planets of mortal origin. Some having gone through stages completely to the end of the planetary's holding capacity, but have, in a sense, broken forth with grand expansion into the space that seems unfillable. The invite is to come forward, yes, to grow and to join us, to populate the rest of the universe, to make the transmission and transition and also obtain the height of true universe citizenship. And this is only a quiet choice that each individual makes, guided by others who are enlightened, perhaps. And sometimes it can take place alone in a type of conscious decision, in partnership with the consult of the Adjuster himself, the actual Father Fragment. You see, many things, many, many things, hinging upon your planet and in your space. And sometimes you find them strange. But where you live right now, on the lower planes of reality, are only a preparatory point for such a great and wonderful preparatory point. For here you receive the actual potential of absolute divinity. A partnership in a grand, and you might call it holy, experience of ascent. You wonder about your present civilization, temporal civilization, physical civilization, technology. All of these things are eventually going to duplicate many of our celestial spheres, which have great and wonderful ways of expressing civilization. Yes, you will be discovering more and more things. But what liberated you as a people to discover these things is becoming free of the toil and hardship of base living the mortal existence, into finding and attuning to divine inspiration, into the base mindful resonance that you have within your mortal structure as your brain, to incorporate inventive, creative characteristics that are really a union between oneself and divine thought, ordered and inspired. So your civilization will progress, but your attitudes and your consciousness must shift to the greater good, to the realize, for the local sense, the brotherhood of man, yourselves, as one true people, and the absolute fatherhood of God. You will gain these things progressively in a way that truly inspires, truly gives forth inventiveness and freedom. The next great stage moves from the communication, evolution and revolution, to the heights of the philosophical realization. Yes, the absolute of knowing that you are not just a brotherhood of man on earth, but a part of the greater brotherhood of man in heaven. This will give forth a grand and greater global ascent. Each planetary domain, some of which you call countries, have been divided up for the purpose of the admixture and challenge that is necessary to bring about development and change. When things are static, fixed, and having no movement, this is not good, because it brings about no development. But when things are separated and differences do appear, the vibrancy and beauty that can, through the blending of both cultural experience perspectives of living as well as the understanding of the divine. Come forward with both challenge and a mix, bringing forth greater revelation and greater understanding of the grandness, of the fullness, of the unmeasurable magnitude of the sharing of the ultimate personality of divinity among the immensity of the human race. And how could it be shared if everyone was one way? But soon, this mixing will take place in a greater sense, not just with the planetary domains, but the actual domains of a much greater sphere of locality, your own celestial system of both planetary worlds in architectural spheres, come into consciousness how truly formative the development of a planet is, but how most splendid is its beauty. Rugged old mountains are beautiful. They have within themselves the natural beauty of their formation. A flat plain is plain. But there is struggle that made that rugged mountain. Sometimes there is in scripture, old and holy scripture, the term the mountain of God that is made up of this structured, challenged, and metaphoric entanglement of peoples. So sometimes you wonder, can we just have a plane, but upon the top of a higher mountain peak, you see how beautiful the mountain is in its ability to structure itself above it. But because it exists, because of the challenge of the pressures of the planet itself, it caused it to come out. I relax myself for this moment and allow you to absorb some of these words. I hope they help you to understand our peering, some of our techniques in which we interface in a non-direct way with you. This is one of our means, the vocal borrowing of each other, the mind sharing. The peering in many times can take its place in what you view as orbs. Orbs are just a glimmer, tiny bubble of our least intrusive ways to observe and to interface. The least intrusive way, yet the most powerful way that your human race, you, people, humans walking on planet Earth is fully engaged with the divinity fragment, the thought of justice. In so doing, you gain a brotherhood and an embrace with each other that extends itself further up to the divine, tying in truly with paradise gravity. I bid you farewell and give you hope and blessing. I, Teodarakthik Shaharan, bid you farewell.
Farewell, Teodarakthik Shaharan. Thank you for coming on and enlightening us once again with sort of our creative devastation here on this planet. Hopefully we will maintain the beauty and the splendor of this wonderful place and I like how you said the mountains of God. They certainly are a very unique creation. Wow, Michael, that's so nice to have Shaharan. And I love when he talks about paradise gravity.
I guess that's what brings us... first of all, I guess it's what draws us to greater consciousness. Because paradise gravity is pretty... It actually has some effect on linear gravity too. And I think maybe eventually we may discover more about it in a sense of it's impinging upon linear gravity or physical gravity. As a consequence, you may understand through paradise gravity's perhaps drawing in toward the, you know, the creative consciousness. You see, part of worship, you know, when we start to kind of like, oh, people worship God and, you know, going to church. People do different things. I went to, you know, Buddhist church, and went to Christian church just because I'm a minister of the gospel of Jesus Christ. But the Islamic, the Blue Mosque in Istanbul, participated in some of their worship and understand the customs and understand where they came from, a Bedouin type, you know, culture and origin, and how humans tend to like to stick to tradition. Traditions seem to be more, comfortable, mm-hmm. You know, traditions. So that's the way they've been done forever, you know. And when you go back to the forever, it's only hundreds of years or a thousand years. It's not truly the forever that goes back to the before the planet was made. Which is the wonderful thing about the revelation of the Urantia book. The Urantia book really does show the actual picture of a really grander experience, which is where worship should take us. It shouldn't bind us into ways in which are, you might say, old, but allow that foundational role tradition to be enlightened with greater and greater truth. Because if we keep looking at, you know, the wonder of, basically the Industrial Revolution and the movement and, you know, the big old engines, steam engines that were put on railroad tracks and caused transportation to change. Movement to become easy. You know, traveling around a planet, I forgot the meaning of where travel came from. The term travel really came from travail. And what does travail remind you of? you know, it almost reminds me of a woman in birth pains. She's having great travail, and you know, the end of this travail, you end up with hopefully a wonderful new life and from, you know, birth experience. So in the travail of moving across the hardship of maybe going from one country to another, one city to another, is the end discovery of that next place. In the sense of travail is the ideal of breaking that, the real hardship of the physical travel today, flying all over the planet, is becoming very easy. That industrial age has made the planet become very small, and now with smartphones and instruments and software that allow for interconnectedness of peoples, we'll find ourselves interconnected in a different way because technology continues to evolve. But that evolution takes place because people got ideas. And where do these ideas come from? They come from the inspiration. They come from actual a fragment of worship, a fragment of true worship. And that is something that I believe Xiaorun was pointing toward in the sense of the development of our planet. It may seem right now, if we were to compare ourselves to another grand planet, would look like pretty primitive, but yet he didn't discount us. Because the true culture, or the true, we might say, purpose of the mortal development is for a much higher ascent career, one that is to be a part of, you might call it the heavenly host, the people that live in heaven. You know, out there it's architectural world, other planets and grand development. Other, most of them are ahead of us. There are a few in this local domain. Progressively have been some younger ones which have never gone through the rebellion of purpose. And that means to be turning away from the first source and center, the Father. May have never turned away, and as a result I've been allowed to prosper. It's almost like a watered garden versus a wild one. It's so neat to have, you know, it's to go see some of these beautiful gardens, the cooking golf gardens or some other gardens that got the name of the garden, rose gardens and stuff there. Vancouver is real nice, golf gardens with like flowers all over the place. Just well tended, and then we can see the variances. Also, the other things that are just natural, you can actually see the differences between natural and the unnatural. And that was the border to Korea, between North and South Korea. What a striking difference, because there was forest in South Korea, right up to the border. And at the border, above it, there were no trees, just bare mountains. Been stripped of their wood for firewood. Every time they tried to replant, people come over there and take the wood because they don't have electricity. They're still back there in the essentially in a type of age where energy cannot be distributed because it's all sucked up for what some crazy guy's idea of ruling the right way instead of liberating people. was a striking difference. It's like, wow. Anyway, that's just a way of the, and I kind of wonder sometimes if, you know, guys coming down and looking at us, or, you know, but I'm not sure what the blue orbs were for, but if they were like a reconnaissance vehicle, you know, what they're looking at. Anyway. Yeah, that's. But Ted was listening all along.
That's good. That's good. He didn't say much about the blue orbs, or. Well, he said that. He called them just a bubble to observe,
like bubbles,
an interface.
Yeah. Not to take a big concern. They're not supposed to be like. What was that? Yeah, there's like different ways in which, you know, UFOs land on the White House lawn concept. You know?
Mm-hmm.
It's not the way they operate.
Maybe they did it one time and they thought, hey, this is not a good idea.
I think it wasn't a good idea. Maybe because of those that implemented it. It was a sense of, a lot of different societies, you might say, try to make contribution into the planet for the common good of the uplift. The ideal of a course is you're not alone. You kind of need guidance and keep your understanding there. Otherwise, you continue to war among. It's like kids that just fighting in their little domain in which they have no realization that they've been developed for, you know, a higher level of the next grade, you might say. Kindergarten kids just learning to get along with each other, learning to become a little more disciplined, just be able to sit down and listen, learn how to play among each other, socialize, you know, and then later they can be developed for, you know, first grade, second grade, third grade, you know. And this is something that we're way down at the bottom right now, at the sandbox level of the kindergarten.
You mean in the development of our planet, or?
Our development of, you might say, our destiny, the human destiny, because many times development of it can proceed past, we can move past the higher levels without evacuating or leaving our physical body, you know, die. But it's actually something that is a progression. But not necessarily in alignment with our physical development, or because many of the things are requiring attunement to the divine voice. That requires actual time, actual living time, and application. One of the things I heard from Ted was that living faith, this is actuated faith or interchange between divinity and ourselves, which builds this faith system, this faith, I guess this faith motive, and that needs to be lived out, living faith, lived out pressure, you know, and that's one of the things that is wonderful, because once you operate within that domain of living faith, in other words, that motivation that is driving you is from a higher source. It's not like the lower source, let's say, in a primitive man, let's say, I'm hungry, I'm going to go hunt something down and, you know, or I'm going to pick a fruit or something that I can satisfy my hunger. And a higher plane was one in which gave greater thought and said, let's put that behind us. You go ahead and we'll do some agriculture here so you don't have to worry about all that stuff. And what do you do with this other time? Well, this other time was much more important in developing much more in relation to the experience of enlightenment and development. And that's what I believe allowed for industrialization, and industrialization was supposed to allow for even more enlightenment and understanding. And we lose our purpose and our way. Sometimes you gotta pull ourselves back. Understand that. Hey, this is not about the temporal level of making money or the pure economic profit motive. It's a higher, greater motive, and I believe that is what he pointed out was the concept of sharing, which is very difficult. If you were to look at only the economic model, sharing becomes very difficult. Wouldn't you say so if it was just built around exchanging money, exchanging finance? Mm-hmm. Sharing becomes very difficult because you have this intermediary in between, which is like the banking system, which only wants things to function in a certain way. You cut them out of the picture, they get furious. And ultimately, governments get furious because that's how they're functioning. So this whole paradigm does shift a bit, will shift.
Yeah, so the bankers get furious if you cut them out.
Yeah, they do.
Uh-huh. Yeah, they do.
The government gets even more furious than the fair share of but anyway, it's all part of the system that has its problems, which makes this whole idea of sharing difficult. People, on a very personal sense, can share, you know, many things from each other. Smaller communities ultimately entwining themselves, revolving, you might say. Without, you know, even if you look at it from the physics sense, if it wasn't for the valence electron field on conductive materials, we couldn't have the electricity flow. You know, we couldn't share the pressure, voltage, and current of electron flow. We couldn't share. Become a, you might say, a non-conductive material, like or an insulator. Both are important, and sharing electrons is so important in electronics, but also the non-sharing of electrons is very important to create the organization. And there are times in which I'm wondering about what is this whole thing about sharing ultimately, to the point it chokes off the rest of the world. Sometimes you gotta fix it before it breaks down again. Right now, I mean, I visited Argentina, they talked about their meltdown, economic meltdown. They said, oh, we made it through, you guys will make it through. Nope, it's always. But then they went through another one. And now you look at Venezuela, it's absolutely melted down. Now you have a singular economy of energy, oil breaks down, the whole economy breaks down. So there's got to be intertwining.
Yeah, Venezuela seemed to be a real oil producer for.
Yeah, but the oil prices went way below the cost of production. So hit them hard.
How could production be so expensive? They're just pulling it out of the ground. It's not like they have to manufacture the product they want to sell. It's literally abundant.
Well, if you were counting on this huge, like you're saying, if you got it and you can sell it, you can pull it out of the ground for $10 a barrel, and you can sell it for $100. Well, that $90, as and you've been living on it, and all of a sudden it gets cut back down and to like. $40 instead of $90, then you really are barely covering costs. It's who gets caught out of the picture. Well, we gotta continue to keep everybody essential running, but these non-essential people, let them suffer. So that's basically the choices that just happen because of the way the economy is run.
Yeah, it's just amazing how just the price of food has gone up so much, so tremendously in Venezuela. I mean, we see what happens in these other countries, and I mean, from afar, Venezuela is really close to the United States. It isn't like it's some distant planet with troubles.
No.
I mean, it shows you how fragile a working system is when it stops working or when something breaks. Everything kind of falls apart. A snowball effect of falling apart. And the people still need to eat and survive. It's just like an overwhelming situation. Poor people on this planet in so many places. It's just heart-rendering.
Yeah. Well, one of the big things that I had as far as a waking vision, wide awake, eyes wide open vision, was seeing the cylinder being dropped down from space into this giant cylinder, which resembles like one of those fuel storage tanks. Except it was cut out of sandstone, and seeing on the walls all of industry and modern society, various societies, but they're running all kinds of stuff running along the interior of the cylinder, which is like a fuel oil storage tank. The center being the picture of a profile of various human important leaders, I guess, and out of that radiating to the side, allowing all of this circulation to go around, which basically is trying to paint a picture of the economic engine and then its relationship right now to the oil dollar or the oil economy, the energy economy. All that is changing. The paradigm will have to shift. And as energy becomes much, much cheaper, the ones that get hurt are the producers who are making a lot of money, you know, selling energy, which is in the present form, primarily of oil. And the other ways that it's going to be produced, I remember seeing the problem and then having another vision thrown at me recently was this giant, when Fukushima melted down, the whole concept was going to lose problem. What are we going to turn to if there's no nuclear energy? Well, first of all, the paradigm shifts from that type of nuclear energy, the hot fission reactor, to the molten salt reactor, which is thorium, which is thorium molten salt, which is a much safer reactor. But that takes time to develop. In the meantime, this giant mountain of black stuff, I was wondering, what is this? Huge mountain I saw, black stuff. This black material looked like stones, you know, all piled up. Then I said, hey, wait a minute, that's coal. You know, we burn coal here at one, in our sugar plantation, which is now going to close. Our sugar plantation, the last sugar plantation in Hawaii, this year will close because of NAFTA made our sugar, which is per acre, the highest producing sugar per acre in the world on the Maui. We developed it. And per acre, we produce more sugar at the least cost. But because NAFTA is allowed, the North American Free Trade Agreement, and foreign countries literally subsidize the export of their sugar at a discount under our cost, knowing full well what our cost is, illegally made our sugar, the Hawaiian sugar that went around the world, was the grand sugar of the world at one time, uncompetitive through unfair trade practices. So that's gone. But that sugar mill also generated electricity by the burning of biomass, and that also exchanged sugar. And many times the sugar ships, which are full of sugar, will return full of coal, and that coal was burned also for the generation of electricity. And that's where I looked. I said, that's when I realized what I was looking at in this vision, this giant mountain of coal. So the celestials were actually allowing me to see that coal is an answer, intermediary answer to the problems of energy. And we have techniques that can make the smoke go, you know, actually the burning of coal very clean.
Mm-hmm. Very clean.
Very clean. We have it here. When I used to watch the old days when they would just burn sugar biomass, the smoke would come out of the big old smokestacks and just go up into the air and make a big cloud of smoke. Then I noticed something changed as there were new smokestacks went up and the old ones were torn down. And what came out of that was white puffy stuff that disappeared right away. And that was steam. So, and it left nothing else. So the scrubbers in there were able to scrub out all the particulates. And what was left was basically steam that went out over the fields, which would absorb the CO2 and then exchange it for oxygen, because the way the mill was set up. So, in a sense, it was a good thing, but because people couldn't understand. They used to blame people on downwind, and they used to blame it on the sugar cane being burnt, but it was really the pollen, because if anything makes pollen, it's sugar cane. Because once it blooms, those sugar cane tassels are giant. You know, one sugar cane flower is about 3 feet in height. That's big. Yeah, it's just a tassel. And it's so full of pollen.
I don't think I've ever seen that sugar.
Yeah, because they want to burn them before all the sugar gets thrown into the tassel. Because that's the energy. So they generally try to harvest before the tassel comes out. But sometimes, you know, the scheduling just doesn't come around. But now I'm looking on Maui and seeing, you know, acreage, just no greenery. It's all dirt now because they've harvested. And they're just going to let the fields go fallow and just have grass grow. there's not going to be any sugarcane here by the end of this year.
That's sad, because of NAFTA. Is that sugar plantation, is that a down country from Makawao?
Yeah, sugar, yeah.
That, so, is that the last one in Maui?
Yeah, that's HCNS. Hmm. Hawaii, California Sugar Company, which is part of the Alexander and Baldwin family of companies. So, huge landowners. This goes back to the turn of the century. It's one of the reasons why Hawaii is a state. You know, the most important reason that Hawaii became a state was Pearl Harbor.
Mm-hmm.
Pearl Harbor was just too important. After World War II, they figured, oh, we make sure it's our United States, the 50th state. For Hawaii, it's always easy to know how many states there are in the Union, because we're the last one and we're the 50th state.
That Mark Dice in San Diego, on the 4th of July, he was asking, I mean, this year he was waving the American flag, the little flag, and he'd say, how many stars are on this flag? And you can't believe how many people he had counting the stars that they didn't know. There were 50 states, 50 yeah. stars.
Yeah.
Unbelievable.
Yeah. Well, yeah, well, that's just... There's so many people that just really don't know history. But the most important thing has been hidden.
Well, they weren't taught history.
Yeah. Well, the most important things about the United States has been hidden is that we are a very special country in the sense that we are an actual country that trusted God. Everything was to be, you know, in God we trust. And it didn't matter what you might call it, variable. It may be in terms of what kind of religion, and even extension of one Christian faith or another faith. It's just in God in general we trust. And that's tried to be wiped out. Once that gets wiped out, then the entire purpose of the human race becomes less, you mean, essentially robbed from us. So that has to return. And that's one of the interesting things that I see. I was a Democrat, but I didn't realize at the time what democracy really was in terms of democratic institution in the United States, which is it replaced divinity with the idea of the godless society running by the will of certain groups of people who would then excite their power through how they organize it. And that became the rigged system. I realized the rigged system long ago when I learned about the Democratic Party's secret room. It's the room where they have a chandelier, emeralds. Chandelier, and it's big. That chandelier is huge. Was a gift from India to the royalty in Hawaii. But it was later hijacked, I guess, by the Democratic Party. They became the supposed royalty in Hawaii. Anyway, didn't matter. Republican or Democrat. But the sugar industry was orchestrating the need to have the protection, you might say. keep the lands, much of these lands, available to the sugar growers, protected. So that's how the state of Hawaii was annexed away, became a United States territory when we came in and took it away from its monarch, the monarchy, which happened to be the queen at the time.
Yeah, it's the only place in America, if we want to call it that, where we had a king and queen.
Yeah.
In Honolulu.
Right. Actual king and queen. The last, of course, being a living monarch was the queen, mm-hmm. who was imprisoned in her own
palace.
Yeah.
In her own palace.
But if it was so serious that she knew the civil war had already taken place, and that's a lot of ugly battles, and the very same soldiers, of course, were being used to annex Hawaii, and they were not. They were not unskilled. Her people were just taro farmers. You know, they were farmers, fishermen, and people who knew how to live off the land, and good people, hardworking. And they were, a majority of them were converted to the Christian faith already, and learned how to read and write, were very literate. That's how we have all this history, and also we're educated by the missionary schools, I guess, and princes, and were educated in England, Oxford, were taken back to England. Amazing. The first telephone west of the Rockies, west of the Rockies, Rocky Mountains, all in Hawaii. In fact, I think one of the first telephone systems was in the Iolani Palace. That goes back to the development of, that was done by Alexander Graham Bell. So it was wired for telephone and was one of the very first ones in the country, United States.
The Iolani Palace?
Yes. Yeah, telephone. So it was wired for telephone. They love technology. Yeah, they did, yeah.
Yeah.
Light, electric lights.
Electric lights.
Yeah, were very first. Yeah. It was, of course, a DC system, but it still was a light, yeah.
Electric lights, yeah, well, our planet is now lit up.
Except for...
except for North Korea.
Except for North Korea, right.
Yeah. How sad that is to see that division line with all the light down below that line, south.
Yeah.
And above, it's just dark. Might as well be the ocean.
Yeah. Yeah. Failure. They don't see themselves as a failure.
Well, thank you so much, Michael. I guess we could record again next time. And Shaharon, Tadiatek Shaharon, thank you for coming on. We love hearing from you. He didn't say anything about a visit here locally.
Yeah.
But it'd be nice to...
Not yet. I kind of believe that it's going to be a big show, but not one in which they're going to land, they're going to make this. Because the other vision that I had was of this immense armada of ships that just make themselves known. You know, that's why it's still important to have people be prepared, at least to acknowledge that many things, you know, like movies and stuff, people are kind of like, the biggest one was Independence Day. It came out, it was the biggest flop because everybody was like, that movie's so boring, you know, no big deal. People already said, we think they're going to come invade us, oh boy. So, but it's not like, you know, it's almost a boring subject already, UFOs. People just really believe in them already. And that's where they can come back. They can come because they don't want to come like Independence Day invaders. You know?
Mm-hmm. Well, that would look rather shocking to a lot of people.
Yeah. But if you were to see the size of their ships, is heck, the one in Independence Day is like a lifeboat. That's nothing. You know, just looking at New Jerusalem and some of the ships. Even that one that shown in a NASA photo by, I think, shooting across, its length is like massive, miles. It would be like way bigger than those ships. Anyway, that's enough said for that. But.
Well, it'd be a glorious sight to see. And yeah. Anybody who has a huge telescope can see it out near Saturn.
Yeah, I guess so. Yeah.
It's out there. And, which reminded me, at the post office, at the United States Post Office, you can go buy stamps right now, and they have views of our planets. Mercury, Venus, Earth, Mars, Jupiter, Saturn, Uranus, Neptune. And on the back, it says, like this one, let me just read this one thing about Venus. The view of Venus was produced from data generated from 1991 by a radar sensor on NASA's Magellan spacecraft that penetrated the planet's thick clouds and mapped details of its surface. The colors are simulated. Now, why simulate the colors? Can't you just show the way it looks? I don't understand. Well,
you know, Venus is cloud covered, so really don't know the colors down there. In truth, because we always use spectral analysis to kind of figure out what material there is, even what suns there are. Recently, you know, almost all the suns that are visible, all the stars that are visible, have a, kind of an old constitution, you might say. In other words, they're secondary suns. In other words, suns from former material that was a sun at one time, that went supernova, then regathered itself out of the stardust, which has a core, generally a lot of iron in it. But they found one star, which is a star that is essentially no iron, very light materials, basically a hydrogen sun, not having anything into spectrum. And these are the ones that the Rancho book says burn as light without heat. Very interesting. Hmm. So, discovered it recently. It's out of this whole zone. And because of spectrometry, you can tell what sun is made up of more stuff, iron. One day they'll find a gold sun made out of solid gold.
Well, Tesla said the sun was an oscillator.
That's true.
If it was a big fireball in the sky, it would have burned itself out long ago. When you look at the photograph of how intense it looks. But, so that's interesting. The sunlight without heat. Oh, did I lose you, Michael?
No, I'm here.
Okay. All of a sudden, it just, the background sound went.
Oh, okay.
Well, we could close and come back again next week and see if Teddy Atik Shaharon comes on and what you also have to say. It's always amazing.
Yeah. Okay.
Okay. Well, you have a good week and I hope this planet survives. It's at a turning point here with politics on this planet.
Yeah.
And saw that not Governor Cuomo, but the mayor of the city, Giuliani. He said he's known Trump for years, and that was an interesting speech that he gave last night. Well, thank you, Michael.
Okay.
All right? Okay. Aloha, Michael.
Aloha.